The death of a child, it's one of the greatest blows anyone will have to bear. And it would be so understandable if that parent crumbles into his or her grief, becomes filled with sorrow and anger. But when my next guest lost his 19-year-old daughter, Julia, to heart disease, that experience of being broken open sent him on a voyage through philosophy, biology, psychology, literature, neuroscience, Egyptology, and more. Vic Strecker has turned his journey of self-discovery and growth into a remarkable graphic story called On Purpose, Lessons in Life and Health from the Frog, the Dung Beetle, and Julia. So good to have you with us here, Vic.
Thanks so much, Cindy.
So give us a sense of what this journey is that Vic in this book is taking, along with Julia, whom we meet in the book.
Well, when my daughter passed away, what I discovered is I wasn't only going through a grieving process, but I had really lost my purpose in my life. And I hadn't really thought about purpose in life all that much until I started reading about it. And I initially read about it.
So you didn't think about it till it went away?
No, that's exactly right.
Okay.
No, I really had never thought about this concept of purpose in life. And quite honestly, if I had, I probably would have thought it's a little bit mushy. And then I started discovering that people who have a very low purpose in life actually end up much more likely to get sick physically and in terms of their mental health. They're far more likely to become depressed 10 years later, far more likely to develop suicidal ideation. But at the same time, people with a low purpose in life are more likely to suffer heart attacks, stroke, even get Alzheimer's disease 7 years later. There's a very nice study done of that in Chicago. So I started looking at this from a scientific perspective. Then I decided to go back into the philosophy of this. So you can go all the way back to Aristotle. You can go back to the Stoic philosophers such as Seneca or Marcus Aurelius. And then you can go, of course, into the existential philosophers. Mm-hmm. The existentialists focused on purpose in life, and they felt that you had to have a purpose in life.
And as you say, you felt like after Julia died, you lost that. And we see you on purpose in this book in that slump that you had to pull yourself up by the bootstraps and try to move on. So you share your journey in doing that.
Well, I decided to be as honest as I could about that. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't a pretty picture. For the first 6 months or so, I struggled mightily in just trying to become a human being again. And I have met, since I wrote this book, literally hundreds of people who have lost individuals in their lives. And this book isn't just about loss, by the way.
Right.
Actually, it's quite a positive book about purpose.
About purpose,
but,
yeah.
But I have met a lot of people who have gone through that road, down that road. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's a big club.
So as you try to discover what it means to have purpose, and as you say, lessons in life and health from the Frog, the Dung Beetle, and Julia, what is that purpose that we're looking for if we don't have it?
Well, I view purpose as a higher order set of goals that you might have. A goal might be, I want to swim across the swimming pool that's 25 meters. Mm-hmm. Or a goal might be, I want to get my Bachelor of Science degree, or whatever that is. But a purpose in life is something that may not even be achievable. And it's usually a collection of different goals that are put together, but I call it a meta goal, something much, much higher order. And in general, the way I think about a purpose, it's generally a self-transcending goal. In other words, it's something bigger than yourself. It's not just focused on you. A purpose in life could have some elements that are related to you, but in general, it's related to things that are bigger than yourself.
And as you say, the science supports that people with this this purpose that transcends my needs have better health.
There's a study that was recently done that had Elizabeth Blackburn in the authorship. Elizabeth Blackburn's the 2009 Nobel laureate in medicine, and she discovered telomeres. Telomeres are the mm-hmm. ends of our chromosomes. She discovered the process that the ends of our chromosomes, these telomeres, actually keep our chromosomes, our DNA, repaired. And when our chromosomes start shortening, we actually start getting sick and we die. And what she did was put people into a 3-month meditation program. She had a waitlist control group, in other words, a group waiting to meditate for those 3 months, but they were just put on this waiting list, and that was the control condition. And they found that the people in the meditation group had greater repair of their DNA, greater repair of their telomeres. But what was very important is that it wasn't the meditation. It was the meditation produced a greater purpose in people's lives, and it was the purpose in life that actually repairs your DNA.
Wow.
So we also know that people who have a stronger self-transcending set of values become less defensive about change. So if I ask a person to quit smoking or that they suggest that they need to quit smoking, I can try to scare them, for example, and I don't believe
that. A popular tactic.
Yeah, and I just don't believe that works very well. Mm-hmm. And I think we move into this negative vortex. We could pay them, and, you know, after that they say, well, what do you pay me to lose weight, you know? Mm. To me, that's another negative vortex. What works really well, interestingly enough, is if you simply ask that smoker to start thinking about their self-transcending values that they have that are is related to purpose in life. And if as they start contemplating those values, they literally become less defensive, which is very interesting. So we've started even monitoring this using fMRI or functional magnetic resonance mm-hmm. imaging. So while people are in the scanner, we're scanning their brain and we start asking them to start repeating their core values. And when that happens, they end up becoming less defensive and they end up they change their behaviors.
And I think a lot of us would be hard-pressed if someone said, what are your core values? I don't know. I think that's something that we
Well, what do you think? Do you think your family is part of your core value?
Sure.
Care? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And you take us through that in your
book. How
about
creativity?
Yes.
How about independence?
Yeah.
So there,
okay,
you know,
we could
throw out a lot of different core values, and you might say, you know what? I care less about mm-hmm. security but more about my community.
Yes.
Or the opposite. Or I care a lot about kindness and empathy. I care less about tradition or more about tradition. I care more or less about money. The idea is that all of us have different values. Some of those values are self-enhancing values like money, your appearance, whether you're famous or not. And then there are others that I would consider self-transcending.
Yes, it's fascinating discussion. If you just joined us, I'm talking with Victor Strecker, and he is a professor at the University of Michigan School of Public Health. But today he's here as the author of the book On Purpose, Lessons in Life and Health from the Frog, the Dung Beetle, and Julia. Julia being the 19-year-old daughter that you lost to heart disease, and it really sent you on this incredible journey. And I have to say, something I never thought I would be discussing in any interview, a delightful dung beetle named Winston. Why the dung beetle?
Okay, well... as I was thinking about this book as a journey,
yes.
You think about Joseph Campbell and you think about the hero's journey and you think about a lot of the movies and books that were generated from this concept of a journey. Mm-hmm. And if you think about Star Wars, who was the sage? There's always a sage or an oracle
in
these journeys. And who was the sage in Star Wars? It was Yoda.
Yoda.
How about in Pinocchio?
Jiminy Cricket.
Jiminy Cricket.
Remember? Was our sage.
Okay,
absolutely.
So he's an insect.
Yes,
he's a little cricket,
yes.
Right? So I started thinking that I better have a sage or an oracle in this particular journey. So I was in the British Museum and I discovered this scarab. In fact, if you go around the British Museum, half of it seems to be related to Egyptian artifacts. And you see these scarabs everywhere, and the scarabs are pushing this sun up all the time. And it turns out that the scarab god, Khepri, was their number one god, and he was in charge of transformation, rebirth, and transcendence. And he would push the sun out of darkness, the night, which they called chaos. Mm-hmm. And, of course, chaos happened to me. It happened to Julia. It happens to everybody, quite honestly. And then he would push the sun up out of chaos every morning. And so he was in charge of rebirth. And so I started doing a little research on this scarab because I thought, well, maybe I'll have a scarab in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that the model for the scarab was the dung beetle.
Now,
humble. Can you imagine these ancient Egyptians? They're just looking on the desert floor and watching these dung beetles roll their big ball of poo forward. And they're going, that's going to be our number one God.
Isn't that something? what we're learning from this humble little beetle?
Well, it's interesting. The family name of the dung beetle is Scarabidae. The other part of this concept of the dung beetle is that dung beetles literally are born into poop, in a giant ball of poop. And I thought lots of us are. Lots of people in our world are born into severe poverty or poop or dysfunctional families, or things happen to us. And what I loved about dung beetles, they're really a charming creature. They take that poop and they turn it into a purpose. And I just thought this is a neat metaphor for me. And, you know, if you can have Jiminy Cricket as a sage, I can have, Winston the dung beetle
and Winston
as my sage.
He certainly takes it through. Did you, in the process of making this journey, and I love that term you use about being broken open, has it left you not fearing death? In fact, I know you quote Steve Jobs telling us death is very likely the single best invention of life. It's life's change agent.
You know, for a while after Julia died, I'll just be honest, I didn't care if I lived. I wasn't feeling suicidal, but I really didn't care at all if lightning struck me and, you know, I went down immediately. And I started studying the Stoic philosophers, and there are a few wonderful books about them, and then reading them, the original books from Seneca, from Marcus Aurelius, they would wake up in the morning and say, I think I'm going to die today. And when I started reading about this, I thought, really? And what they would do in thinking they would die that morning or that day, they would live a bigger life. So they realized that the finiteness of our lives is very much like the finiteness of any resource. If we have $10 and somebody asks for $5, it's harder to give them than if we have $10,000. Well, Marcus Aurelius literally said, don't live your life as if you're going to live 10,000 years. And I started thinking about this from the perspective of public health and medicine. And you know what we keep doing? We extend life, which is fine. The country that has the highest life expectancy, Japan, also has the highest suicide rate. And that struck me. You know, what are we doing in our field of public health and in medicine? We're starting to promise people a second century of life. That's what we're doing
we
now.
We are. You're
That's
right.
The promise of medicine now. And what would we be doing in that 200 years? Would we just watch more Kardashian sisters? Would we watch every Miley Cyrus twerking video three times now? I mean, in other words, would we spread our meaninglessness in our lives over a longer period of time? And that's what I was really concerned about. So this book is really about understanding that you have a finite number of years. It may be today. It may be when you're 100. But whatever that is, you want to live those days as if it may be your last day. You want to live every day to a maximum. And it's something that Julia taught me, because when she came down with a virus when she was one, she needed a heart transplant. We had no idea how long she would live. And in knowing that we didn't know, we lived a big life with her. And that transformed me as well.
Her 19 years. Well, it is a remarkable book on purpose. Lessons in Life and Health from the Frog, the Dung Beetle, and Julia. And we've been talking with the author, Vic Strecker, of the University of Michigan School of Public Health. And it's a remarkable graphic story. And I think it's something that you read and then you keep nearby as you kind of go through your own life's journey. And I want to thank you so much for sharing yours with us.
Thank you so much, Cindy.